Good morning, everybody. Pardon me. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for being with us on the 16th of October, 2024. It's a pleasure to have you here. It's going to be a pleasure to have my guest here as well. We got Phil Birchenall here. Phil leads immersive learning team. The immersive learning team. I want to say that right. Over at Discovery Education. And yesterday I did a show about important this is to get kids involved, even though they're not close to what they're learning about. Okay, they can easily learn about Portugal. Okay, while they're sitting in California, etc., or Chicago, or whatever. Immersive learning is key these days. Okay, and I always like to say, you know, we talk about ed tech, and I think we never said ed chalk. Okay, technology is education these days, and we use virtual and augmented reality to teach kids, etc. It really makes a transformational learning experience. So I wanted to get Phil on the show today to talk about that. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, and I hope you go over there and enjoy it. Phil, it's Larry here. How you doing?
Larry, I'm doing great. It's nice to talk to you.
Thank you. It's good to have you here and talking to you as well. It's a pleasure. Where are you today?
Okay, so I'm over in the UK. I'm in the northwest of England, and I'm hoping that the rainstorm that's lashing my house at the moment isn't interfering with the sound quality that much. It's a pretty typical northwestern autumnal day here.
What town or city are you in, if I may ask?
I'm in Cheshire. I'm about an hour south of the town of Manchester.
Ah, there you go. Okay, how beautiful. How wonderful. I love going over to the UK. So although the weather stinks, I'm always jealous of somebody who's over there. So, and I know it's where you live, but to me, it's where I vacation. I love it over there. So it's great to have you here, I got to tell you. And I'm in Maine, where, by the way, all the towns are named after English towns. Okay, everything in New England is named after England. You know, what can I tell you? I live in Cornish, Maine. There you go, Cornish. There you go.
Cool. I love it.
Yeah, there you go. It's good stuff. Okay, have you ever been to New England? Let me ask you that before we get into this. You ever been to New England?
I have. 20 years ago was the last time I was there, and it was an amazing experience. Yeah, it was fantastic.
What I find when I go to England, I love seeing all the signs directing people, and they're all the same names of the towns that are here. I just love it. To me, it just cracks me up.
It really struck me when I was there. It's just like, oh, I get it. Why this is New England.
It is New England, and a lot of people don't realize it, but, man, it really and truly is. It's British-based. What can I tell you? And I have to ask you one more thing, Phil, before we go on, because you're in England, and I didn't realize you were going to be in England today. Okay, I was reading in the New York Times about Conkers, C-O-N-K-E-R-S.
Yes.
Phil, these are everybody, I just want you to know this because my wife thought I was bonkers when I started talking to her about Conkers, which are Buckeye chestnuts. Yep. Buckeye chestnuts, like Ohio State for you Americans. Okay, uh-huh. Buckeyes. Okay. And there are contests. Phil, you want to explain this, or should I do it? I really can't. Okay,
we're not just a contest, Larry. Not just a contest. Yes.
World championship,
and there was real scandal and controversy transpired that someone had coated a steel ball and made it look like conker in order to beat the other person. So this is unprecedented levels of scandal at World Conker Championship.
It is, and the World Court will be chiming in pretty soon, I'm sure. You put a string through the chestnut to conquer, and then you try to knock the other guy's conquer open. And when you win, everybody else is out of conquers. Yeah.
As a child, you spend hours on this. You soak your conquer in vinegar to harden it up, and you've got to go for it. It's banned in most schools now for obvious reasons because we had a lot of playground accidents.
Losing an eye. There's one. Losing an eye. Yeah. So it's pretty ridiculous. I read it in the New York Times today. I was laughing like you can't believe. Okay. I mean this with love in my heart. It is so British. It's hysterical. And I'm having lunch with a British friend of mine tomorrow. And they just find a chestnut on the ground. I don't know. Just bring it to them. What can I tell you? Phil, it's amazing. We got to talk education, but here's to the people with the Buckeye chestnuts. Okay, Phil, you are running the immersive learning team. And this is interesting. Yesterday I did a show. I don't know if you know these people out in California, and they're using Discovery Science Program for California. They're called Scholastic Prep, and they're a lovely school. They work with a lot of homeless kids and, you know, the kids who need help, you know, lesser income communities, et cetera. Lovely charter school. They're really doing great work. But they were talking about how important it is, since they've got the Discovery in place, in Discovery Education materials in place, that it's so important for these kids, especially the homeless kids, they don't have access to a lot of stuff. Okay?
Yeah.
But the since they've been using this and other stuff as well, there are ed tech, if I may, and the Discovery in particular, they're able to open up the world to these kids, okay, who don't have the chance right now to be immersed in the world. Now they can, and that's key stuff. So I'm going to let you go from there. Talk about yourself and how you work globally and what all this means with the immersive learning.
Yeah.
You're on, Phil. Put your conker away for now, Phil. We have to fight it out
I'll
later.
I'll put my conker down, let's focus on immersive.
You got it.
So, I mean, I'm a teacher of an ed tech content creator for 33 years now. And I've always majored in what I consider to be immersive education and immersive learning. And I think you've hit on a few really important points there, which is like focusing on that school, on what they do, and more importantly, the context in which they do it. So, you know, they don't have the access. You know, at home they might not have the devices. In school they might get great opportunities to do that as well. But this cuts right to the heart of it. And I know access equity is dear to your heart. And
it is.
How we make immersive content is all about the principles that make it. And this goes across the whole of content creation and discovery education. If you look across our platform, and I know you know it, Discovery Education Experience, that you know these principles, that any piece of content in the right hands can be immersive, because immersive isn't technology. It's not a headset. It's not a handset, you know, and I always say it's a feeling. And to be immersed is to have a feeling. And so how do you generate that feeling? So whether it's, you know, an exciting off-the-shelf, ready-to-use activity that we've created, or whether it's one of our legendary virtual field trip videos, they are immersive to some degree. And what we're doing is trying to understand what those principles are that make something engaging, because engagement is just the starting point for the use of content like this. So once we've made it engaging, how do we make them go further in? Well, we try to ramp up the feeling of immersion in that. So when the time is right, when the subject is right, the content is right, then we will go to effort to make immersive content for ourselves. And I guess I'm being a little bit woolly, because I'm not telling you exactly what immersive content is, but it is something that triggers that kind of a wow moment, we call it, or something that makes you stop. And that's important. It makes you stop. If you're one of those students in that school and you've got all of that going on in the background, if we can make you, with all that happening in your life, stop for just one moment and maybe open a crack in the doorway that allows an educator and their peers to step through with some learning, then we're getting somewhere. And that's why we put effort into making content that is immersive, and looking across the broad range of education technology that can deliver it. But really, it's all about a principle. It's about an idea, and it's about a feeling.
I mean, I think that was a beautiful way to say all that. You know, and it's that wow moment when you just, I want to say it this way, you just want to go deeper, all right? And you start to learn, okay, and really learn, and it gets inside you. Okay, and then you want to get inside it, if I may. Okay, and it's just really, it's just so darn important these days. You know, you said something interesting. You said you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, that it's not so much the technology, because this has been going on long before technology was available, so to speak. Okay,
yeah.
But now, and I agree with that. Okay, but we used to have to walk to the library or go to the World Book or the Encyclopedia Britannica, okay, and still not get the, you know, you look at it on a piece of paper. Now, you wouldn't look at it in a three-dimensional area, okay? That was almost impossible. There's the difference. Now you can suddenly, maybe you can't touch it, but you can certainly look at it and get the sense that it's real. Okay, and that's what the virtual and augmented reality does. Okay, it takes learning it puts it into you got me going here philosophically. It puts it into a real context. Yeah. Okay, talk about that.
Yes.
Okay, the whole idea of virtual, augmented, and you've got to make these decisions, almighty leader of immersive learning. Okay, you're the leader.
Yeah.
Okay, talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the things you're so right about is to pull out the philosophical elements of this, because by understanding the philosophy and the psychology of education gives us the ground. You know, that sets the ground. Those are the foundations of what we do and why we do it, by understanding all of that. So, you know, we know the history. We know what immersion is. We know why it happens. We know how it happens. So what we've got now in front of us is this amazing array of technological devices and approaches that allows us to switch it on. You know, we can game the system by saying, okay, well, let's make some world-scale augmented reality. You know, so we host this on experience, and so you can go somewhere, you can create, and this is really important too. Student has agency to create their own environment. So if you're studying Jamestown, for example. You can go and build your own Jamestown settlement in Sandbox AR. You can then scale that up, and you can record yourself walking around it in life scale. So it's a bit like a virtual reality experience. Now, that's incredibly immersive, and that's incredibly engaging, and that creates that wow moment.
You're there.
So
you're there.
The difference we've got between augmented and virtual reality, because it is important to point these things out, is that virtual reality is incredible. We have something we call the immersive scale at Discovery Education. And if you think everything on the right is super, super immersive, a VR headset is right over to the right. It's super immersive. But it's also quite individual as well. It's like you put it on and you have an incredible individual experience, but you might not be so much engaged with your peers, your learning peers, you know, your classmates. So that's important, whereas augmented reality, you're looking through a device. So you've got something like an iPad or an Android tablet, and that becomes your magic window. You know, you look through it, and you see something virtually projected onto your own reality. Now, that's really powerful, because you see what you're looking at. So I'm looking out at my backyard at the moment, and I could have an elephant in my backyard, life scale, and I could go up and I could walk around it. That's pretty immersive.
Yeah.
Now, a really important thing here is that that really draws people. I don't know if you've tried it. If you have, you'll know. It takes about 30 seconds before your brain has convinced yourself that elephant's not virtual, it's real. And so from that point on, you'll actually stop yourself from bumping into it. If you get too close, you'll look up at it, you'll see it, and you'll think it's there. Your brain is telling you. So we have teachers telling us things like, there is a quote for this on our platform, which is like, the students write about having been to somewhere like Jamestown, not from a point of view of having read from it in books, but because in their brains, they've been there, they've seen it, they've walked around it, they've talked about it, they've explored it, and therefore
it's like a vacation.
Writing.
It's why people go on vacation to places. It's why people travel.
So they're writing from So they're writing from a point of experience, and because of that, the depth of their writing, you know, the quality of their writing, that all deepens. It's all amplified. And that's why we use immersive content. And that's why we use these principles really carefully to you know, we talk in Discovery Education all the time about sparking curiosity. Curiosity is the starting point.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with that in mind, spark that curiosity and it leads all the way through. And with the right content, with the right philosophy, the right psychology, the right construction, we can do amazing things.
We can do amazing things. And by the way, you said something before that I think is so – well, you said a number of things that are important, but I wrote a couple of these things down. And one of them is – and you said this sort of at the beginning, not to misquote you, but now we know how people learn, okay? You know, it's neuroscience, okay? And we never knew that. Yeah. In 1950, we didn't know that, okay? Now we know it.
Yeah.
All right? Now we know. We're starting to learn how people learn, all right? And that's a real important factor. And by the way, I've always said it's something that's left out of teacher education. Every teacher that's part of their education to become a teacher should learn how people learn, okay? And I don't think that they do, okay? Not that I love teachers. Don't misunderstand. I'm talking about their education, okay? It would be like a doctor, and you don't know why the heart works the way it does. Okay, that's not good.
Yeah.
Okay. You got to know how the brain accepts learning. And then the second thing you said, which I thought was really important, I never kind of thought this through, but you put it in a nice perspective for me. Okay. You know, we talk about virtual reality, and you always see on TV and all that. No, I have not done it. I haven't put on one of those things yet. Someday I will. Okay. But my point is, it's not real. What you're looking at, okay, in those goggles or on the screen is not real, okay? But your brain has to be convinced it is. It is not reality. Yeah. It is virtual reality. But literally, your brain has to start absorbing that it is reality, okay? And that's what makes it virtual. I know I'm saying what probably everybody in the world knows, but I never thought of it that way. Okay, I just thought of it as virtual reality, but in reality, your brain is saying, "Oh no, this is real." All right, and once your brain gets over that hump, okay, it's a whole different experience. And again, I'll say it's like going traveling. Okay, there's a big difference looking at the Leaning Tower of Pisa and on a piece of paper and looking at it in Pisa. There's a big difference. You start to get the feel for what's going on here. It's a lot different, if I may, to read about a famine then go to Somalia or somewhere and see the famine, okay? There's a big difference between one dimension and three dimensions. Yeah. I'm just jumping on all these things, Phil, but I think this is important stuff for teachers to understand. This is the way we need to educate people, and we can.
Yeah, this is fundamental. What you're talking about is fundamental to all of this, and these points you're raising are absolutely spot on. And actually, no, look, people don't often think about, that experiential element to it. You know, and more often than not, we see, okay, well, it's virtual reality. Let's go and, I see lots of games and I see lots of things where, the classic one is you get to dissect a frog and you get to do things. And it's great, it's cool and everything. But it's like, there's a lot of expense in that headset. There's a lot of expense in making the content that goes to it. So if I'm going to go to all that trouble to make that content, I want it to really make an impact. So what you pointed out and what you pulled out were the things that make us remember something. And when we remember something, it's when our emotions are peaked, when they're stirred and everything. So like we can't yet make you smell the smells of going to Italy and seeing the Leaning Tower of Pisa. But what we can raise all those atmospheric cues. So we can give you the music, we can give you the sounds, we can give you the hustle, the bustle of walking down a street going down Fifth Avenue or something like that. We can give you that. And rather than saying, this is what Fifth Avenue looks like, count the buildings, have a look around you, look at that one there. We can say, what's it like to be in New York City? You know, what does it feel like to be in New York City? How is that different to your reality, your perceived reality? And you get much more out of a student by doing that than you do by pointing out, there's the Empire State Building, there's the Chrysler Building, because you can show them that in a book or on a film, you can even show them a 3D model on a laptop. But to make them feel something, we modeled the Edge viewing platform at Hudson Yards in virtual reality. And it is, you get to know what it's like to stand there. You get to know what it's like to stand however 100 feet up in the sky it is and look down through that piece of glass.
Yeah.
And I've seen people with the headset on not want to step over the edge of it because they're too frightened to do it.
Exactly.
And you can only do that because you make them feel they're there. So the learning opportunities, they're off the charts if you have the right switch. And I think you were spot on in that. It's about experience. It's not just about showing.
It was the way you explained it that gave me all the hints to do it. And you bring up another point. A lot of this, and I'm curious how Discovery incorporates this, is the psychology of all this. Okay, I always think about the educational experience of it. Of course, you can show you know, Jamestown as an example. But there's a psychological, you were just saying it a minute ago, there's a psychological aspect to it as well. Have you talked to psychologists about this or whoever? I don't know. I don't even know if that's part
A lot of what we do is based on research going way back, and it's also based on our own research of what happens when people encounter this kind of content. I think it's okay for us to say that we are out there, we're pioneers in this understanding of what this kind of content mm-hmm. does to a student and a teacher when they encounter it. So it's very important for us to look around at different things. So, you know, if you look at something called cognitive attractor theory, which is, you know, reasonably old, but reasonably new as well, it's like it talks about how you benefit from those moments that I described before that stop you in your tracks, you know, disruptive moments mm-hmm. in your life when something, you know, that's what, you know, it's kind of simple, but it's kind of complicated too. The simple thing is we want to engineer that moment, but we want to engineer it in a way that's safe, that leads to something else.
Exactly. And there's another interesting point to this. I mean, you guys are K-12, okay, with all the work you do with all this. Uh-huh. But what's good for a kid in first grade, and you put this up a minute ago, virtual reality, you're on the edge of the Empire State Building. I'll make this up, okay? For a kid in 12th grade, that's kind of fun. You're on the edge of the Empire State Building, okay? Woo, boy. But if you're in first grade or second grade, that's scary. That's psychologically Absolutely. Scary, okay. And I'm curious how do you make the judgments, okay? As you go, and I'm talking now mm-hmm. education K-12, how do you make the judgments as to what to stop where, okay? What to put where? What grade? You know, what's grade? Mm-hmm. That's the word I'm looking for. Effective, okay?
Yeah, what's grade appropriate?
Thank you. I couldn't think of the word.
It's a great
question.
Thank
you very much.
Yeah. It's a great question, and
thank you.
You do have to be responsible with experiences like this. You know, going back, I've been involved in modeling a trench that was on the eve of the Battle of the Somme in World War I, and it was very, very realistic in virtual reality. And we had to dial things down. So it was all about atmosphere. It wasn't about fighting. It wasn't about that. But it was about how do you feel when you are on the verge of maybe at the end of your existence. That's deep and that's tough. And, you know, that we've got schools in the UK here you've got classrooms where there are refugees, there are people that have been through things. And, you know, we've got to be really careful about what we do and how powerfully we present things. So it's a powerful medium. So you're right to call it out. And what we try to do is to make things open. So if you look at something like Sandbox, it's a maker. Sandbox is an augmented reality app that we make. And what we do across the platform is we provide support materials. And this is the beauty, and this is why I love what we do in Discovery Education, because we are such a range of people with expertise off the charts in all kinds of areas that can contextualize things. So it's like, okay, if you're in that first grade and you're doing that, this is appropriate for you. So we'll have support materials that show that, and we'll give extensions that take you through different types as well. So it's, you know, we want the educator to make those decisions. Sandbox is a maker environment, so you can create your own learning environments. So a teacher can set it to an age appropriate, grade appropriate level if they want to. But we do have to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, immersion is powerful. So we've got to be careful. We've got to do it right. And I think we do. I think we strike a great balance.
I think
balance.
You do,
but
too.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, you do. And my whole point in asking was, you know, how do you do that? I mean, who is it? You got a great team. But you have to take all these things into consideration, okay, before you put it out there. It reminded me of something when I was just a little kid. I don't know, getting it age appropriate. I have to tell you this story. When I was in kindergarten, I don't want to tell you how many millions of years ago that was, okay? But when I was in kindergarten, okay, cave people had just died off. And the teacher in Philadelphia took us to the planetarium, the Fells Planetarium, okay, in Philadelphia, which is a big planetarium. Okay, but she never mentioned that the planetarium projector, remember we're in kindergarten, looks like a giant ant. Okay, that's what a planetary projector looks like.
Yes.
Okay, so the lights go down. She's got all these kindergarten kids with her, and all of a sudden, this giant ant in its projection starts moving towards us. And myself included, we all started screaming, thinking this thing was going to eat us. Okay, and my point is, you've got to be age appropriate. She should have had a little lesson. What is a planetarium? She took that for granted. Okay, actually, the ant, by the way, did not eat us. Okay, it was the planetarium projector, but it's a true story. And you know, you're not taking kids to the planetarium. You're taking them to Mars. Okay, and really, and it's just there's a lot of responsibility. I know you guys back it up 100%. Goes along with this. Okay, to make these things experiences age appropriate, make them not only fun, but give you that wow moment. And by the way, I did have that wow moment when I was much older at the planetarium and really got into astronomy for a long, long time. Okay, but and I never liked dance after that. Okay, they were too big. All right, but that seriously, it's true. And the responsibility goes with it. And also, you mentioned, I have to ask you this because you mentioned it. Okay, we don't have, if I may, you know, you. We have visual, we have oral, like hearing, but we don't have olfactory into virtual reality. Talk to me about that. Are we ever going to get the sense of smell in that thing? So when you go to the zoo, you can actually smell the monkey house, okay? And I don't have to tell you what that's like. Or go with the hippopotamus house, okay? They do have an odor, which is good. That's what nature's like. Talk to me, olfactory?
Believe it or not. Well, believe it or not, back in, I think it was 19, I'm going to mash my dates up here, but I think it was the early 60s, there was something called Picorama. And Picorama was the very, very first, what I would call fully immersive device. And what you used to do is you used to put your head into a TV set, and it would be 3D stereo, and you'd have speakers around your ears. It would blow air in your face when for the wind, and it would inject some smells into your nose as well at the same time. Funnily enough, it didn't take off. But ever since that point, people have been looking at it. The trouble is that a lot of smells that are manufactured through chemical engineering, because that's how they do it.
Yeah, of course.
They have the uncanny valley effect on us. We know they're not real. So, to an extent where it actually holds us back. So it's a really interesting thing.
There you go.
People are talking about it. There's a place here in the city of York, which is a recreation of a Viking village. And as you walk around it, there is the smell of rotting herring and the cesspit.
Wow.
And everything.
There you go.
And yes, it does ramp up the immersion, but it also ramps up your desire to end the tour pretty quickly too. So I think, you know, that there's a balance to be struck, but that's why we overdo the other bits. So we'll overdo the sound over the fact of the other things that are missing. And that does a pretty good job because the brain's pretty clever at filling in the gaps. So if you make certain sounds, you make squelching noises and things like that, you'll imagine, if you have a lawnmower cutting grass, you'll imagine the smell of grass. If you ramp up all those cues, the brain does a fantastic job of filling in the gaps.
It's amazing what's stuck in our brains, considering the size of my head. I can't believe there's that much stuff in there. It's not that big. It's not that big, my head. I don't know how all this crap got in there. Okay. And what's next? What are you working on? What's the next thing you're working on over at Discovery with all this? Give us a hint. What's the next thing? What's the next thing, Phil?
Well, it's not based around technology. It's based around our understanding of everything we said, because access and equity of access is so important. So what we're doing is that we're creating a whole range of content. I call it the content ramp. So it's like, it doesn't matter what you've got. If you've got some really old handset, if you've just got a browser, if you've got whatever it is you've got, you can have some kind of immersive experience. You can engage perhaps in the same. We have something called Time Pod Adventures. So you can engage in Time Pod Adventures in a browser and play it like a game, as well as going on to full augmented life-scale augmented reality as well. You can do the same thing, but you're going to do it in different ways at a level that's appropriate to your means that you've got available to you. So that's really, really important. And, of course, we're embedding that across all the great materials and everything. Number one, if we spark that curiosity, they will come. And if we've got it in the right format, they will get something out of it.
Well said. Phil, this has been more than enjoyable, I got to tell you. Okay? This is great talking to you. Thank you for being here today. And I hope the weather clears up.
Me too.
And I hope may your conquer always be real. Not steel.
May my conquer.
Thank you.
Yeah, no steel conquers here, I promise.
Pretty amazing. What can I tell you? Phil Bertrand, thank you, my friend. You have a great day over there, okay? Take care.
Thank you, Larry. A pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Be good. Bye, Phil. What a great guy. Okay, Discovery Education, check it all out. I got it all linked. Okay, Phil Bertrand is their senior director, okay, of immersive learning. He knows his stuff. They know their stuff. And I'm telling you, I did a show yesterday with Scholastic Prep, and this is making a real difference for these kids. Okay? And they deal a lot with homeless kids. Okay? And it's just amazing, the difference. And these kids are, they have a good chance. Okay? They're going to make it. All right? Anyway, we're going to archive this show at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.